Good evening, everyone. I was thinking how much I love sitting in the evening at night here. We haven't said anything about Yaza yet.
Planning to do a.
It's about time.
Tuesday feels too soon. Wednesday feels okay.
It's time. Yaza means night sitting. It means I'll let River tell you about it. Because River's got it planned. But it's something about sitting at night in a quiet zendo. So sorry to disturb it. But we've added these, well, we have had evening talks many times, but since last year, we've timed them to be when people are in the zendo at Wall Street to invite you folks in the Wall Street zendo here to Loon Lake, now that we have the technology to do so.
I think there's a message or something. Somebody's waving. They can't hear you.
Oh.
Oh.
What happened?
It's right up in there. Oh, that's Jeff.
Yeah, it's on.
It's on.
Did it?
Wall Street.
Oh, Wall Street needs help.
Try turning up the volume on the laptop. Oh, they can't hear me when I say that. Can you hear me now? Yes.
Well, we almost have the tech to do this.
The sound, they want the mic. The sound quality is
not the best.
Hold on a sec. Let's just mention one thing before we crack up the karaoke.
Yeah, that shouldn't make the difference for the Wall Street. It's this.
Let me turn down the gain. Okay, how's that?
How's this? But
same as always.
This is the mic that should make the difference for Wall Street.
Original sound is off.
No.
We can hear them very low.
But the other Zoom people, it's okay, right? Yes, it's the Wall Street, and maybe it's that old laptop that they're using. That's if that's what all they have.
They'll manage, they say.
Okay, everybody just, come a little closer to the laptop, I guess. It's only the second time we've done this. Oh, this is all on recording. Well, some of us have spent the last 8 weeks with Vimalakirti in his sick room, along with a host of the Buddha's disciples, bodhisattvas, and supernatural beings. But for some of you, it may all be a bit strange if you haven't been along for the ride. Early Mahayana sutras like this, and the Lotus Sutra is another one, can be a bit over the top, with imaginary realms where the Dharma is communicated only with fragrances, bodhisattvas flying around on lion seats, etc. This is not what those who like Buddhist philosophy for its compatibility with science are comfortable with. But, right, skillful means. Different media for different folks. Those who are anime fans can probably imagine a Vimalakirti version. We'll leave that to your imagination. Right. On Wednesdays, at the Wall Street Zendo, we use what we call a Dharma seminar format, with an informal talk And then small group talking circles with a focus question or two. And unfortunately, we can't do that because it's Sesshin and you're not allowed to talk. Because we've been practicing being quiet and not activating that verbal discursive mind. Except for Dharma talks. That's our assignment, our practice for Sesshin. So, I will do something a little different. There's a book called What Would Buddha Do? Has anybody seen it? It's by a fairly obscure author who's not a Zen teacher. His name's Franz Metcalf. I can't, I've not read the book and I can't vouch for it. And the finicky part of me says, hey, wait, there isn't and never was some guy named Buddha. There was very likely someone called Shakyamuni Buddha, the awakened sage of the Shakya clan, whose given name was Siddhartha and his family name was Gautama. In terms of Buddhist, what's called mythology, there were seven Buddhas before him. And there hasn't been one since, though Maitreya is the Buddha yet to come. But of course, all of them are representations of what's called Buddha nature, the true nature of being, which in the Mahayana view is not something we achieve, but something we all share and are, something we practice, realize, and actualize by letting go of all that obstructs it, all that obstructs the clear light of our aware mind. Okay, that's another talk. I just had to get that quibble with his title out of my system. Vimalakirti, on the other hand, was very likely a relatively ordinary person living like you and me with a family, a job, and all that goes with living in human society, who somehow, we don't know how, became greatly renowned for his wisdom and skillful means, his enlightenment. So we could well ask, what would Vimalakirti do? And it might even be more helpful than what would a Buddha do? Because Vimalakirti lived in the midst of all life's mess, just like us. Curiously, in the sutra, Vimalakirti says a lot. He offers much good advice and Dharma wisdom. But we don't actually get to see him in action, out in the world, applying skillful means in all those various circumstances and places we're told he visits. Right? We don't actually get those scenarios. So we have to imagine them. We have to imagine what he would do. Now, if we were in the Wall Street Zendo, doing a Dharma seminar format, I would ask you to generate some questions to ask Vimalakirti. Let's call him Vim for short. Sounds like an advice column. Ask Vim. But instead, because I have to do the talk, I'm going to imagine some and let you imagine what he might answer. If my questions make you think, oh my God, she's talking about me, just remember, I've heard very similar things from different people. So I might do some fictionalizing and hope that no one feels targeted. So let's try this one. Dear Vim, my workplace has become a hell realm of animosity. Even though we're all committed to an important cause, Our executive director was dismissed by the board, and the staff were deeply divided, some in support of the ED, some against. This is breaking my heart, because I like these people and I care about my work, and I can see some validity on both sides. What would you do? So I'm just going to give you a moment to imagine the scenario. You can add any details that you might imagine and see what your inner vim might answer. Okay, I'm not going to give you definitive answers. I'm just going to give you what comes to mind for me. And the first in this case is the practice of equanimity. Staying upright, not swayed from side to side, finding your place of integrity, without judging those who are stuck in their views. Practicing daily compassion for your own distress, and the anguish of your colleagues, discerning when to speak and when to refrain from entering the fray, and maybe most important, careful listening. Yeah. Listening for the fear beneath the angry, polemical voices. Can you be spacious enough to hold their turmoil? Okay. Next one. Dear Vim, my 13-year-old daughter has turned into a demon. She was such a sweet and thoughtful 10-year-old, but now she just lashes out at the slightest thing I say. She sulks and stomps and slams and has started hanging around with some older kids who really worry me. I am terrified that she'll try some dangerous drug, but if I say anything, she accuses me of not trusting her. What would you do? Take a moment to reflect. Vim replies, "You'll have to ask my wife. She takes care of all that while I'm out applying skillful means in the marketplace." If his wife was here today, she might tell you to stay close, but not too close. Be the adult, even when your inner 13-year-old wants to fight back. Hang out, just be in proximity. She's more likely to talk, especially if you really listen and don't give advice. A contemporary Ms. Vim, the writer Anne Boyer I mentioned in an earlier talk, who was diagnosed with late stage, very aggressive breast cancer when she was 41, it necessitated a double mastectomy and chemotherapy that nearly killed her. Her daughter was 13 at the time. And one day, they were out shopping and they witnessed a deer that had been hit by a car struggle to its feet and stagger across the bank parking lot. And her daughter said, "I hate what the world has done to the world." And a bit later, she said, "The only choice left is terrorist or shut in." Kids can feel like that these days. Boyer continues, "I tell my daughter that my BRCA genetic test came back negative. I tell her that without a hormonal cause and without a genetic tendency and without obvious lifestyle factors, the cancer I had probably just came from exposure to radiation or random carcinogens, and that she doesn't have to worry that she is predisposed or genetically cursed. You forget, she answered, that I still have the curse of living in the world that made you sick. Gut punch. From a 13-year-old. When you have a teenager, you have to have the resilience to hear and respect their despair. Next one. Dear Vim, I'm not that old, or at least I've only thought of myself as heading into middle age. But I've been having more and more health problems. I've developed some food sensitivities, I'm having joint pain, and COVID really knocked me out for weeks. I still have intermittent fatigue and brain fog. I'm really frightened. There's so much I want to do in my life. And I need to keep working for some years yet. I'm not old enough to retire, and my medical leave will run out soon. What would you do? Reflect for a moment. Vim asks us, turns this one back on us, and asks us to consider, how do you answer this or any of these questions without resorting to Buddhist platitudes? If this was your good friend, how would you respond? Would you feel like shying away? Is her dilemma a little bit too close for comfort? Or would you move in with your problem-solving kit? Or would you make a safe space for her to express her deep feelings about this and allow her own wisdom to emerge? Okay, last one. Dear Vim, I've spent the last 5 years, more really, working really very hard on a vital environmental issue, devoting a lot of time and energy and passion, even taking personal risks. And at this point, it's feeling to no avail. The powerful interests are so entrenched, we don't seem to be able to penetrate their defenses. And I'm so tired and discouraged. What would you do? I might take this person to a wild beach on a stormy day and walk in the wind and sit on a drift log and watch the waves. What would you do? I hope this little exercise will help you summon your inner Vim when you or someone else is in need of some upaya. And I hope this time of practice here at Loon Lake has been upaya for you at this time in your life. We have had an unprecedented week of sun sparkling on the surface of the lake, frost crystals twinkling on the ground, and celestial bodies shining in the night sky. Have you seen Jupiter at its brightest as we come to evening zazen? You get a little view between the trees. And then as we go up to the dining hall at the end of the day, Mars at its reddest. I've never seen it so red. Oh, maybe I have. At Loon Lake, we have a tradition to have a song or a lullaby on the last, or in this case, next to last night. And looking at the night sky, I realized what one I wanted to sing to you. It's a song from an old Judy Collins album. And if you know it, it totally dates you. Out under the winter sky, out under the winter sky, stars come trembling on my eye, stars to tremble my eye, and I feel like something's gonna die. I feel like something's gonna die. I feel like something's gonna die. Hand me wings for to fly. High in heaven in early morn, high is heaven in early morn. People sleeping in beds that are warm, sleep in beds that are warm, and I feel like something's being born. I feel like something's being born. I feel like something's being born. Tells my soul not to mourn. Ooh. Ooh.